listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. Now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good,
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Sword Art Online After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Sword Art Online After Show.
Hey there, AfterBuzz fans. We are here to talk about Sword Art Online today. And we've got something special for you. We're doing two episodes today, Crimson Killing Intent and Girl of the Morning Dew. I'm your host, Megan Salinas, and joining me on the panel today is Katie Cullen.
Salutations.
Liz Rishmawi.
Hey, guys.
And Tari Miller. Still my favorite part.
I like this version. Sped up, but I like it a lot.
I know, it's great. I totally bought this on iTunes the other day, so I've been rocking out to it at home, not gonna lie. But anyway, so we're changing up the format a little bit. We're gonna start covering two episodes at once because we wanna catch up because Gun Gale Online is on and we want to catch up. We want to cover it because we know you guys want to talk about it too. So let's go ahead and dive on into it. Crimson Killing Intent, what did you guys think of this one?
I liked it. Waiting for someone to talk.
Well, we just came off of a boss fight, and then we go straight from a boss fight to a really impressive duel.
Yeah.
Short, you know, I think like the time at the end of the duel was like a minute and 30 seconds or something like that. But it was still a really impressive piece of animation. But overall, like, you know, again, like I said, we go from something monumental like a boss to kind of something that, you know, guild politics and then a fight that kind of breaks out over that. So it's kind of odd to go from, like, the big boss fight to kind of something more, I don't want to call it mundane,
right,
but to go to, like, a smaller matter.
But it's, you have to understand as well that this is now a whole new leap where we're establishing a deeper connection between the two main characters, and we need this little fight and the little stuff that happens afterwards in order to establish that to set up for
other
episodes.
And so it's a huge game changer too, because now Kirito is stuck. He's committed to commit to something.
Yay.
Commitment.
Well, maybe that's been his problem this whole time. He just doesn't want to commit to any guild.
It's the scariest word for a man.
You can't be around people. They die.
Well, they kind of do.
Untrue.
I mean, if there's anything I've learned from this series, it's kind of tend to stay away from Kirito.
I want Kirito to just, like, watch Game of Thrones and be like, yeah, see that? See that? Shut up.
That is my
life. Isn't that bad, is it?
You're doing pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah. But guys, he's still trapped in a death game.
That's true.
He's already had his own personal red wedding.
At least when
true.
At least when people die, it's like pretty. That's all I'm saying.
That's true. There's a moment in this episode where I'm really glad it's just red pixels, because otherwise that would have been horrible to watch.
It would have been Game of Thrones.
No, it would have been like Hostel or something.
No,
we got to horror
wedding
movie level of Hostel. Anyway.
Yeah.
So
bad.
Let's go ahead and go into what actually happens in the episode. So we pick up right where we left off with the leader of the Knights of the Blood Oath, Heathcliff, challenging Kirito to this duel because they're fighting over Asuna for reasons, I guess. But I think there's, you mentioned last week that there's probably a lot more to it than that. So we go to this really kind of cool gladiator-style coliseum for this duel. And the rows are just packed with people. I assume they're players and not NPCs. But
well, they're selling tickets. I assume they'd be players because NPCs wouldn't care.
They would just be there.
And Kirito makes a fun little comment like, do I get a cut of the ticket sales?
No. I thought it was funny that, like, the because that was the level that they had just unlocked, and it's like, oh, it just happens to be a Colosseum level. How convenient.
Of course it is. As far as I'm concerned, Heathcliff is evil. And this is just more evidence.
No spoilers,
well,
guys.
No spoilers in the comments.
I'm not spoiled. Please don't do that
No spoilers
to me.
In the comments. But that's one of the reasons why we're trying to catch up, is because for the most part we're not spoiled. Anyway, so they go ahead and they engage, and Kirito has his dual blades out because that was part of what Heathcliff said specifically. He's like, if you can beat me with your dual wielding skill, then I'm more than happy to relieve my second in command
and also
of her duties.
And also the fact that it's basically more, and I think that's why it was so packed in the stadium. It's like, it's the only two characters in the game that apparently have these special attack moves.
Yeah.
Where Heathcliff has this really cool,
I think it's called the Divine Blade.
Yeah.
The Divine Blade and the shield. The just amazing, you know, people are just like, we've never seen his health bar, his HP bar dip into like the yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, considering this is a death game, really impressive.
Yeah,
so
impressive.
We know that he's the leader of the Knights of the Blood Oath for a reason.
And considering how many times we've seen Kirito go into the red blink, blink, blink. You know, so.
Well, Kirito has no shield and doesn't fight quite as smart. He's intense, but he's not strategic.
What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, because, it's supposed to be the ultimate defense versus the ultimate attack.
Which is very clever. I thought that was a good way to kind of pair them up together.
Right.
So I noticed, if we're going to go divulge a little more into this.
Please do.
When they're fighting, there is a scene. I mean, because again, this is a rather short scene. It doesn't take up much of the episode. But there is a moment in the fight where there is an opening. And, you know, again, I know what happens. I'm not going to spoil anything.
But I'm the only
there
one
is
who doesn't
a
know,
there
aren't
is
I?
A. I would just say, if you want, rewatch the episode. There is a little bit of foreshadowing where it almost seems impossible that he could have blocked it.
Liz, you're verging on spoiler territory. Just stop.
No, I'm not.
Decided that he's cheating.
The episode, in the episode, Kirito is literally about to strike Heathcliff, like in the face,
like
with his sword.
Away.
And the episode makes it very clear that something is up, because we pretty much get a freeze frame and we get movements of Heathcliff's shield moving in slow motion while Kirito is, you know, frozen in this moment.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, Heathcliff manages to dodge something, what it seemingly impossible.
Yeah.
And that's when he manages to hit Kirito and get Kirito's health to dip down into the yellow.
Mr. Lemieux.
Well, I do want to tell you guys one thing, is there's more than one unique skill, just like he has dual wielding.
Okay. Right.
So just have that in mind when Heathcliff is dodging these things, which seems impossible.
But I'm also saying, too, that as somebody, when I first watched that episode, I noticed it right away and thought that something was off.
Yeah.
Well, they make a really big deal out of it with the everything
going
red.
It makes
red
me
and the
think
slow-mo.
That somehow Heathcliff cheated.
Oh, yes.
They kind of hint, you know, in earlier episodes that, you know, with the Illusionary Avenger, they hint at the idea of people sort of being able to cheat the system, even though that's not really what happened, because those people weren't really dead. But they plant the idea that there are ways to sort of get around things in Sword Art Online.
I mean, even Asuna with her, like, sauces and stuff. You know, like, there is a way to do things and to create things and make things happen, but it just takes a lot of
lot of know-how, a lot of study.
Yes.
Again, because she's a genius. It took her a year to become as good as she did. But again, it, like that moment, watching the episode, I was like, he cheated. I don't know how. Somehow that guy cheated. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I can think of.
Oh, and again, they put a really big emphasis on it. It's like, pay close attention.
Yeah, they almost did like a Matrix camera swivel for a little bit. And it was like freeze-framed and like color-coded. Mm-hmm. So it's like, pay attention, everyone.
So if you miss that, you were not watching.
Yeah. But then, you know, and then it goes on to, I found it interesting in the duel, because we haven't seen many duels, you know, we've maybe seen glimpses, but I guess as soon as they hit the yellow is when the duel's over. And then, you know, so I was surprised when it ended right there. I was like, get up.
Yeah,
and then it said, congratulations. And I was like, oh,
like,
never mind.
Winner.
Stay down.
Because, I think there are different types of duels that you can do, because the duel he had with Kuradil a couple episodes ago, it was a first strike.
You can call
it. It's whoever gets the first, you know, hit on the other person, that's what they win.
Yeah.
Right.
And this one, they were nicking each other. Like, Kirito got nicked in the face, and Heathcliff got nicked in the face as well, and he got really mad.
Oh,
he was like, you touched my face!
I don't think it was a nick.
That was a great reference. Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't think it was a Nick fight, though. I just honestly think that they were just that highly leveled in skill that they just couldn't get any more of a hit in. But anyway.
And even though it was short, it was a really cool duel. Like, again, I can't emphasize enough how beautiful this series is.
Yeah.
So it was really great to see. But unfortunately, Kirito loses for, like, the first time we really see, like, somebody get the better of Kirito. You know, somebody besides Asuna. Yeah. and so now Kirito is committed to joining the Knights of the Blood Oath. And we cut to the next scene.
Oh, my God.
And he's in the Knights of the Blood Oath uniform in white.
And it's hideous. Oh, it looks so
bad. Those are not his colors.
Yeah.
Not at all.
And I love how Asuna, she's basically wearing the exact same outfit. But it's like the girl version. I'm like, well, yours is all cute with the little red skirt and then the long tails in the back. And he's got he looks like he tripped into a flag. Tangled. And it was, I don't know. That's basically the best way to describe
it. That's exactly
like
how it
looks. Theater costume.
He got caught.
You want something off.
And it doesn't even look like it even fits him properly.
And it doesn't. What's funny, too, is she's like, that's one of our less flashy outfits. Yeah. You got one of the less ostentatious ones.
Yeah, what do the other ones have? Chest cutouts and spangles?
into a surrender flag, that's all.
But, you know, he collapses down and he's like, great, I joined a guild. And Asuna, feeling kind of guilty, even though he assures her it's not her fault, she asks him why he's so against the idea of joining guilds to begin with. And he finally, you know, tells her about the moonlit black cats. And what happened with them and, you know, the kind of tragedy that surrounded that. And how that still very much has left an impact on him to the point where the very idea of joining a guild is still something he doesn't want anything to be a part of.
His own personal red wedding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To which, you know, she just, you know, kind of, you know, says, I'm not going to die because I have to protect you. And it's another moment, and the hand thing, you know, he's all like, should I hug back? No, I'm defeated. Like, you know, so he's just kind of accepting it. Like, I guess it's kind of, he's taking it in. Maybe it was like just a moment where he was like, well, that's good that she doesn't blame me. Like, she's not saying I'm a horrible person for this.
And he's being, you know, in this moment of character interaction, he's being very passive. Whereas we see later on in the episode, he completely switches and becomes an active member in this relationship.
More aggressive, yes.
Yeah. And, but yeah, I thought that was a really sweet moment when she, you know, is just looking him in the eye and she's holding, you know, both of his cheeks and she's like, I'm going to protect you. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very sweet.
Yeah.
And, you know, call me a sap, but
I will get into it between the rest of this episode near the end, or more so like the next episode, which I can't wait to get into because that's just going to be real fun for me. I thought that was also sweet too. I mean, just in general, me personally, I care a lot about the people in my life, and that would be the attitude I would take with either somebody I was involved with or relationship, or friends, family. So
yeah.
It's nice,
especially you know in something like this where literally every day is a matter of life and death.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so we cut to the next day, and Asuna's really looking forward to getting some alone time, finally.
But
Godfrey, you know, a frontline commander, is like, we've got to evaluate Kirito's skills. See what he's like on the front line. And she just looks at him and goes, he's stronger than you!
Yeah. And he's like, you know the rules. And I ever since I heard his name, I just wanted him to sound like Gilbert Godfrey.
That would be awesome.
I can't do that. We need to look and assess your skills. I can't. I'm sorry.
You know!
Yeah, that. We all suck. Nobody can do an impression of
Nobody can do Gilbert Godfrey. I'm sorry.
I just wanted, like, Iago to be like, yo, like, we're doing it. So.
See, but Heathcliff struck me at, not Heathcliff, Godfrey. Names. I'm good at this.
He struck you.
Yeah,
as
I don't think I can say that.
He struck me as the type of character that I really liked him right away.
I did.
Yeah,
too.
Me too.
He's like a high school football coach,
except
of good mood.
Yeah.
We're gonna do the thing, and it's gonna be great. Hoo-ah! Let's go clear a dungeon. You said hoo-ah. That was in the script, and you said it. And I love you now. You are a wonderful person.
Well, it makes me wonder. I'm trying to remember what the Japanese version sounded like, but I mean, it just. Again, he's got that attitude like he's in the military.
Well, if there's anything I've learned from watching a series like The Walking Dead and Game of Thrones and Attack on Titan, it's be careful with getting attached to people.
Yes.
Anytime there's a character where you're like, I immediately like you, stop and think and reevaluate your life, reevaluate your choices, because it's very possible that that character's not going to be around for long.
Yeah. He's either going to be Klein and disappear into the ether for 90% of the series, or he's going to be Godfrey, and
and we'll get into that.
And then we see, what's his name?
Kuradil.
Kuradil.
So Kirito,
who's a stupid name.
After saying goodbye to Asuna, he's like, don't worry, I'll come right back. After saying goodbye to Asuna, he and Godfrey go out, and Godfrey drags out Kuradil, and he's like, I thought this was the best way for, you know, us all to bury the hatchet. You know, we're all on the same team. And you can hear the musical cue clearly stating that this is not a good idea, that this is
loathing.
Terrible.
Look at his face.
Yeah.
Just
he's
the way
not
he's,
happy to
just
be
the
there
way
either.
No, in general, he's just a character that's drawn like you look like you're up to some crap. I mean,
the only thing missing is the twirly mustache.
Something. He just looks.
It's the brow line.
It's like the long, dark, greasy looking hair. Like, why are you the only person in this game who looks like you haven't bathed? And just like the brow, and just you look like Snape. I don't know.
Mr. Kirito. Kuradil looks at Kirito and he apologizes for being rude and what sounds like a more sincere apology, but really isn't. And that's when we have Godfrey going, okay, we're all friends now. We're all on the same team. Let's go clear a dungeon. And
yay.
I will say that yay was probably the moment in this episode that had me laughing the hardest.
It was just a harsh winter came, and they were forced to eat Sir Robin's minstrels, and there was great rejoicing.
Yay.
And I really like, and I always know, and then again, it's like that obvious, like, really, you had to foreshadow in that way. Where he's like, well, I got to assess how you react to, quick thinking and
dangerous
stuff.
Dangerous situations.
So let me take all of your crystals.
All of your inventory.
Yeah. Including the transportation crystals or anything that
and
could
the healing
heal you.
Crystals.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not, foreboding anything. But yeah, so he takes that.
And they go and they stop to rest for a little bit. And the second they drink the water, Kirito immediately notices something's up because Kuradil's looking at him, smiling. And Kirito throws the bottle away.
He didn't open his lunch pack at all.
And he throws the bottle away, and immediately we see that paralysis status effect change. And both he and Godfrey are affected with it. As Kuradil's giving this maniacal laugh, Godfrey tries to take out their healing crystals, but that's when Kuradil stops him and
he's
kicks them away. And that's when this was terrible too, because it wasn't just like a one hit kill.
Yeah.
It was repeated stab wounds over and over again. And anytime the camera cut back to Godfrey, he was just covered in all these red slashes.
Yeah. It was like really bad paper cuts.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like.
And like
Which
I said,
is why
that's...
we're grateful that it was pixels and not, it would have been Game of Thrones. It would have been Ruby.
Well, in the Japanese, like, his screaming is a lot more highlighted. Like in the English, they kind of downplay it.
They subdue it a little bit.
But the Japanese is, I remember watching it.
Yeah.
It's a lot
it's
more brutal.
Brutal. Yeah.
Yeah. And
which, again, pointing out again how much, we talked about, me specifically, I remember mentioning, like, what do we know that they feel? Do they feel pain? Do they do this? They can taste this, that. And we know from, like, with Klein in the first episode, he shouldn't have felt the attack. So we still don't know the level, but I think it might just be just the... I mean, how would you feel if you know you're dying? And
you can't do anything.
I would scream like a maniacal bitch, too.
it's really hard watching scenes like this in this series.
Because I immediately love you.
Like I said, don't get too attached to any of these characters.
I made that mistake.
And it sucks because I really liked Godfrey. After a couple minutes, I really liked him. And he disappears into polygons. As Kuradil's monologuing this really half-baked plan of, like, I'll tell everyone we were ambushed and that you two were killed and that I single-handedly
killed them off and got them back.
And what was really interesting about this moment, too, is we actually see Kuradil's, like, icon change from green to orange.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I got goosebumps. I was like, oh, no, this guy is terrible.
I knew as soon as the next thing he did when he removed the plate.
Yeah,
off,
when
off
he
the
removed
inventory.
His...
You sound like you belong in a murder guild.
And sure enough,
guild, says Kirito.
And sure enough, he's a member of Laughing Coffin. Which I didn't know you could be a member of more than one guild in this game.
I mean, well, Laughing Coffin, I think it's just they technically, I mean, they might not even actually be an actual
They might not be
an
official guild.
Right.
Yeah. They have the mark and they undergo, you know, they're always in hiding in other guilds to screw with people and other parties to
Which
like,
makes
basically
sense
kill them.
Because if your guild, they're if like your ninjas. Main guild is a murder guild or any sort of criminal guild, you yeah. wouldn't exactly want to be out in the open about it. Yeah.
Right.
You're going to be like Titan's Hand, yeah. where, yeah. you know, you're going to be working from the shadows.
Yeah. Well, it brought up a lot of questions for me, mostly because, I mean, if he was actually part of Laughing Coffin, he wouldn't be a green player, necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Well, yes. We know that we know that sometimes you don't have to get your hands dirty to be a criminal.
Yeah.
But we also know that, you know, the icon color changes after a couple
it's
days.
Like 5 days right. or something.
Yeah. So you can go and kill somebody and then kind of go into hiding for a little bit and then come back when your icon changes back.
Yeah.
Did we already give the throwback to the episode when, Kirito is fighting Crocodile.
I was just about to go
and,
there.
And you see that Laughing Coffin's in the audience watching the
yes.
fight. You guys were wondering who they were watching. They were actually.
And that raises so many questions. It's like, well, was that the whole purpose behind that duel then? Was just
right.
to see what Kirito could do.
Well, you have the strongest guild on the entire server, I guess, which you'd call it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they're going to have spies in the evil guild. So that's Crocodile.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the biggest one, too, so it's they're going to slip through the cracks.
And we've had Asuna mentioning that a lot of the political, you know, aspects of the Knights of the Blood Oath have gotten really weird lately.
Yeah.
And so if Laughing Coffin is doing some sort of, like, covert, like, corporate takeover, so to speak, like, that's terrifying. If the Murder Guild has infiltrated and is taking over the Knights of the Blood Oath,
yeah.
that's terrifying.
Here's my theory. As the only currently unspoiled person on this panel.
I got spoiled for some
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, she got spoiled. She tells me this after I've hashed out this theory. I think that Heathcliff is either in or the head of Laughing Coffin. Because when you see the person who was watching that duel between Crocodile and Kirito, you kind of look at him. He's got the same similar jawline. We actually went back and checked.
Mm-hmm.
So, looks like him. It would make sense that he would know that Crocodile was in Laughing Coffin, and you would put someone you trust as a member of the other guild that you're secretly in to be watching over the second in command you want to keep an eye on.
Okay.
Right.
And what
we're, okay. Do you like my face, how I'm not giving anything?
You got a really good poker face.
I'm sure the people in the comments are going to be key smashing and going, actually,
right.
no, don't you
before
tell me
you,
a
before
thing.
You, before you leave a comment, just no
don't
spoilers.
Don't you tell me a thing.
Anyway.
Which
anyway.
Makes me wonder, Crocodile either had this planned and sanctioned and had this particular episode's events planned, sanctioned, everyone knew he was going to do them, we're going to get rid of Kirito because even though he's a member of the guild, he can't be controlled, or he slipped his leash and did this on his own.
Okay.
So it could be either way, but I still think Heathcliff's
evil. I am going to tell you, though, I'm not giving anything away, but, like, I'm joking because we're all like, K. but if we were watching the series as it aired, I think that would be an amazing.
Yeah.
That's a very good analogy to get into that. But continuing on, because we have two episodes.
We've got a lot to cover and not as much time. So continuing on, he starts attacking Kirito, and Kirito's health is rapidly
really
decreasing.
Declining.
And he's gotten to the point where Kirito's health is in the red, and Kirito has pretty much given up trying to fight him. And when all of a sudden, to the rescue, Asuna comes out of nowhere, gives Kirito a healing crystal, and then turns around. And this has been my favorite moment of the series so far, is just seeing Asuna full-on attack Crocodile, like, not holding back. And she's the lightning flash for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And she disarms him. And he gets to his knees and he's begging for his life, in a very cowardly way. And, you know, for somebody who's a member of the Murder Guild, you know, all of a sudden the tables are turned and now he's begging for his life going, I don't want to die. And she hesitates because she's a good person.
Yes.
And I feel like
works every time.
Yeah. And he, in a very cartoony villain way, he disarms her and he's like, it's the oldest trick in the book. Like, he's some sort of Looney Tune character.
Right.
He is at this point.
He just reminded me of the bad guy from Roger Rabbit, basically.
Judge Doom. Judge Judy. Oh, that's a great comparison. Yeah. Yeah. I love that movie.
But then out of nowhere, because you think, oh, crap, Asana, come on. But out of nowhere, we have this awesome block into the sword where it literally Kirito's just there, and it chops off his hand.
He's been disarmed. But it was a handy technique.
No more of that.
Wow. No, I regret nothing.
Bryce Papenbrook has a lot of trouble as his characters with losing
keep
a hand.
The left arm on.
And I, as a horror movie fan, I really wanted, like, my inner horror movie nerd was like, can he equip a chainsaw to his hand? Like, could we groovy. Do that? That would be amazing. That would be groovy.
I wanted
yes.
him the thing that, what's his name from Walking Dead had.
Oh, yeah, Merle.
The,
yeah.
Merle. I wanted the Merle Stabby. Hand thing.
But he manages to stab Curadiel with his other hand, which I didn't know that you could do, but it
he
makes sense.
He's shining fingered yeah. him. It's just
yeah. Or going back to like Gundam, yeah.
but I would say, no, it does make sense. I mean, we see this later in the episode, too. It happens again with a glowing hand. But basically, I mean, it makes sense. When you think if they don't, there's no magic involved, and if somebody loses a weapon, there has to be hand-to-hand combat. And then depending on the level of that the character's at, it could be strong enough to actually.
Yeah, and because know. Asuna had gotten Curadiel's health down into the red, you know, very, very thin, mm-hmm. it didn't take much for Kirito to be able to kill him.
To straight up rip his heart out.
And, that
was... very much so. Very Indiana Jones, yeah.
Kalima.
But we have, they're safe now. They don't have, you know, Kirito minus a hand, but apparently that's not too big
they
of a deal.
Regenerate.
If you I didn't know that they regenerated. That's pretty great.
it's a scratch.
When I first watched the series, I was bummed that it grew back because I wanted the rest of it to be him essentially having to take a back seat and strategizing from that point on.
I really just wanted the equipped chainsaw hand.
Well, yes, that's way better than character. Anything.
But anyway, so we have the two of them, and Asuna's blaming herself, even though she came in and saved Kirito in time, but she's blaming herself, and she's saying, I should stay away from you from now on. It's not safe mm-hmm. for you. And that's when we see Kirito finally man up, and he leans in, and he kisses Asuna. He grabs her, and he kisses her, and he basically confesses. He's like, my life belongs to you now. Mm-hmm. And she promises to protect him, too. And he asks if he can stay with her that night. Mm-hmm. And so they go back to her place. And they have dinner, and
I love how abrupt it is too. She's like, you know, like screw dishes or anything. Shut off lights. Take this off. Well, what are you waiting
she
for?
Basically
take your clothes off too
in front of him.
Yeah. And he's like, that is not what I meant. I'm not complaining, but that's not what I meant.
Yeah, I think the problem is he didn't say that I'm not complaining, but that's not what I meant. So she basically does the glowy hand thing and then just runs, get it down.
Like, you idiot.
I think she just slapped him.
Right.
She knocked his
lights
out.
There's a little bit of ambiguity because we show her hitting him, and then we cut to a little while later, and he wakes her up.
And she's not wearing anything.
She's not wearing
apparently.
Anything. So it's like, did they sleep together, or did they not? Or did she just knock him unconscious, and she's like, okay, I'm going to bed.
As far as I'm concerned, that's what happens. She sleeps in the nude and doesn't care, because Kirito is fully dressed, and no guy who's going to stay gets fully dressed afterwards.
No one said he's going to stay.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I was like,
he doesn't run.
He had his shoes on. He's like, I got to go, but you're awesome. I'll call you. I'll totally call you.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, nothing happened. He would have been too damn scared after that.
Probably. Right. Anyway, the episode ends with him saying that there's a house, you know, that we should get together on floor 22. And after that, we should get married. And Asuna agrees, and that's where the episode ends. And again, I'm a sap, so I'm sitting here going, aw. And I'm kicking myself, too, because I'm an adult, and I'm like, I should not be, like, aw, at sappy stuff.
Sitting here going, really?
Well, at least not
really?
That. I mean, anyway.
Anyway, but before we go on to the next episode, we want to talk to you really quick about Maria Menounos' new book, The Every Girl's Guide to Diet and Fitness. If you want to be as good of a cook as Asuna, there are some great recipes in here that are healthy. Oh, what?
It was just a really great tie-in our show into the book.
If you want to max out your cooking skill, this is a great way to do it.
Without getting extra handles on your body.
Exactly.
And it's also really good if you guys are really busy. A lot of us here at AfterBuzz, I mean, even just the people who are helping run all the technical stuff, I don't know how they sleep. So this is something where you can still maintain your health and yet still have fulfilling meals and lose some weight during a busy schedule. So you guys should check it out.
Exactly. Yes. And we also want to talk to you really quick about iTunes. Guys, we love hearing from you in the comments section on YouTube. And we also love love hearing from you on iTunes as well. So if you guys want, please slap us with a 5-star rating. Leave
Do
a
it.
Comment on iTunes.
Do
because
it.
It's the only thing that lets our bosses know that you like what we're doing and that you guys think we're doing a good job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell
otherwise
us you love us.
Otherwise, they're going to be like, anime? Psh. They're like, no, anime. That doesn't make sense. Sorry.
That's exactly
we
what they're going to say.
We have had a couple of comments saying, I like this. This is really great. More anime, please. And we're like, they love us. They really love us.
So if you guys
us.
Like it, just slap that 5-star rating and keep up with the comments. We're good.
All right. Let's go ahead and dive into the next episode.
Girl, we're not doing that.
We could try to do a karaoke version, but I don't know a word of Japanese.
Something Japanese. It's true. They're moving fast, and then people blow up and stuff.
I think I just want an ad-libbed version sung by Liz. That sounds awesome.
I'm stuck in a game.
Girl, awesome.
We're going to do this next week when we have more time,
oh,
but
God.
I will work on my own written. I will do it. I'll do it. I'll do
awesome.
It. Me too. We should collaborate.
In the meantime. Okay, so we cut to Girl of the Morning Dew, and it opens up with Asuna and Kirito appealing to Heathcliff, going, look, this, you know, there's stuff going on. We want to take a leave of absence. And Heathcliff goes, okay.
Which is like, what?
Well, I
we
mean,
just had to fight for your second in command to retire, but hey, we just want to leave for a couple weeks, and you're like, sure.
But I think at that point, he has really
he
no choice.
He had proven his point, first of all,
yes.
in terms of asserting his authority in the guild. Mm. And now Kirito is a guild member, so now this wild card now has to answer to him.
Right.
So.
But it's more if they think of the thing, especially, they know what happened. They have to, yeah. they have to know what
exactly.
had happened. So basically, I mean, at that point, it's like, it was his fault, technically, that he ever wound up in that situation. So I think at that point, Heathcliff's just like, all right, you know what? Fine, take your time. But you know you're not going to be able to stay away too long because we got to get back on this
He's
battlefield.
He's like, honeymoon's
because
not
going
to last forever.
Come get you.
Honeymoon's not going to last forever. We need you on the front lines.
Exactly.
Like, don't think you can stay away from the battle for very long. So they go down to floor 22, and by this point, they're married, and they've bought a house, and now they have no money.
Yeah.
Which
because
I thought was really cute.
Who needs
because
money
that's,
when you have
that's what happens when you're newlyweds. You buy a house, and then you're broke.
Or you have an apartment for a few years, so you can save it up. But, you know, they're 16 and 17 years old. They don't know that.
They're in a death game. Like, they might not be able to wait for very much
exactly.
longer.
Yeah. They're bitty.
But, yeah, so they have a cutesy little moment. And, you know, it's very cute. It's, you know, it's young love. But it's very cute to
it's
watch
just,
them interact.
The entire time watching it, I just felt like they're playing house. It's just like, it's the dramatic skipping over the dating stage of what you would do when you're in high school, which, you know, it happens. And I guess, in a way, you're in a death game. You're going to probably grow up a lot faster, so to speak, to an extent. I'm not giving him that much credit.
They have known each other for 2 years, though.
Yeah.
That's another thing to think about.
I know, but when I know somebody, when I meet them when I'm 14, I know them for 2 years. I'm not going to be marrying them in 2 years. So, but...
Yeah, that's another thing. Don't use this example, kids.
Yeah, anybody who's below the age of 18 listening into this, like, please, like, by all means, look at the lovey stuff, but don't follow them.
Don't follow their example. You're not in a death game
of bad decisions. Don't do the thing.
But anyway, so I thought it was very funny how, you know, they get up one of the next scenes, and they get up, and she's just so excited, and I think it's still really funny, and maybe, again, it's the cultural thing about how, I mean, because even, like, in Japan, a couple can be dating, and it's, like, a year until they ask, can I call you by your first name?
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was cute how, and kind of funny how, you know, she's saying, let's be together forever, and then he's like, huh, what'd you say? Oh, did you hear what I said? No, I didn't. What was it? Oh, and she's like, oh, embarrassed. I'm like, you're married already. What are you embarrassed about? That's basically supposed to mean you're going to be together forever anyway. So,
yeah.
And,
but they bring up the good point, you know, is our relationship, is that
is
something that only
this?
Exists in the game? And that's when Asuna says, absolutely not. Like, no, of course, I love you. And when we get out of here, I'm going to find you and I'm going to fall in love with you all over again.
After physical therapy.
Yes. Not right away. It's going to take her a little bit of time to learn to walk again.
Not physical therapy, more like mental therapy.
Physical
therapy, too. They've been inert for 2 years.
Oh, yes, obviously. I forgot about
Once I am physically and mentally able, I will come find you and I will fall in love with you again.
It's like, just exchange phone numbers or emails. your technology is advanced enough that you can be in a game and for 2 years. I'm sure.
What's good about
you have some sort of social networking?
Well, and what's good about this, you know, this game in particular versus something like Dot Hack is that this is how they actually look. Mm-hmm. Whereas in something like Dot Hack, when somebody gets stuck in the game, you don't really know who they are because they're stuck as their avatar.
Exactly.
Right.
But anyway. Moving on, so they're in cutesy, very honeymoon mode, and they decide to go for a walk in the morning because Kirito has a good idea. He knows someplace fun to go, and Asuna makes him give her a piggyback ride all the way down to the lake,
which is so funny when they start like really.
When he starts
watching,
when he realizes that there are people around, and he's like, "Nope, you're fine where you are," and he takes off running down the road. And they get deeper into the woods when it's really foggy, and he starts telling her the scary story about ghosts in the game, which is so weird considering that we know ghosts in the game are a real thing from a couple episodes ago.
And I just really want to say, real quick, flashback. I actually now I don't think they slept together in the other episode because when she's climbing on him and she's like, "If you pee." I'll kill you. And it's just one of those things where, and then again, she might have done that anyway, regardless whether or not they slept together, but it's kind of like, he's seen it. He's seen me on the panties, so it's fine. Just,
Well, and, no, and they actually have twin beds.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they were really married, quote unquote, I wouldn't see the
kids.
Need for that. But
kids.
Yeah, they're still kids.
Kids playing house.
Yeah, that's very much
what
how
it
seems.
But anyway.
It's cute, but it's very much kids playing house. But anyway,
right.
So he starts telling her this scary story about a carpenter who was out in the woods
just
gathering
the other
wood.
Day.
And just not too long ago, and all of a sudden
in
he
this
sees this white ghost. And sure enough, as he's telling the story, she sees a white figure. And she's so scared, she does practically a backflip off of him and uses her detection skills to really look and make sure that what she's seeing is real. And she certainly sees a little girl, and as she's ducking because she thinks it's a ghost and Kirito just freaked her out, all of a sudden the little girl collapses and Kirito runs over, and they both run over to go and see, and they realize that she's not an NPC, she's not a quest,
she doesn't have an icon,
but
at
she's
all.
A person, but yeah, she doesn't have an icon.
Mm-hmm.
So there's clearly something wrong, and she's asleep, and they don't seem to be able to rouse her awake, so they decide to take her back to their cabin. And
hope for the best.
Their cabin in the woods.
Yeah. Oh dear. Hope for the best. And they're postulating. They're like, surely she's got a family somewhere because most kids can't sign in to Sword Art Online by themselves. Chances are they'd have a parent.
Yeah. And and what's up with this no icon thing? You know, what are we gonna do? We hope she wakes up because we got to ask her. And I just all the analyzing and stuff because they said she can't be. It couldn't have been a quest. She can't be in. What are they?
She can't be an NPC because something would have happened like as soon as we picked her up.
Yeah, they would have prevented her from leaving the area. So now it's just this whole big mystery of like who the hell is this kid?
And thank goodness we have Kirito and Asuna on the case because as we've seen before, they can solve some mysteries.
Super sleuths.
Jinkies.
Jinkies, Kirito. I hope we solve this mystery.
I don't know, Asuna.
I just like Megan's voice just now, like she's like a news reporter from the 1900s. Listen here, say, so we got a scoop. And I'm like, Humphrey Bogart, 1920s? So anyway.
Scooby-Doo. Anyway, moving on. Asuna decides that, you know, they're going to protect her at least, and that she hopes that this little girl wakes up soon. So
and
they wake
up.
And then they wake up the next morning, and sure enough, the little girl is awake. But we see that she's very infantile. She can't really pronounce their names. She doesn't remember anything. As they're talking to her, and they realize that she can't really pronounce their names, they're like, well, you call us whatever's easiest for you. And she picks Daddy and Mommy.
This is what happens when you have sex in a game. Children from the woods.
The stork dropped it off.
We were thinking that it was very like Pokemon breeding.
Yeah.
Like they just stayed in the same area together and now all of a sudden there's an egg somewhere.
You get the Pokemon type from the mother and the nature from the dad and
when two people love each other
very much
they'll walk around a forest one day and find somebody to adopt.
And that, children, is where babies come from. Anyway, so they decide to keep playing house a little bit, you know, until they figure
feeding
out what to
her.
Do with her.
Mm-hmm.
So they you know, they have lunch together. And they actually do take to playing mom and dad very well.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they decide that, you know, kind of the best thing to do is to take her back to the town of the beginnings to see if they can try to find her parents.
And if anything, that's the very first place which every single player started at. So she has to try to remember something.
Yeah,
she
nothing
she was
else.
Definitely there. If no other floor, she was definitely on that floor.
Yeah. Right. If nothing else, it might jog some memories.
Yeah.
So they take her back. And the first thing they notice is, wow, this town is really empty and for the number of people who should be
this
living.
This is where we get a little bit more information. We know that there are 6,000 people still alive in the game, which
10.
That means 4,000 people have been dead over the last 2 years. And that 30% killed. Of those 6,000 people, have been killed, sorry.
Have been dead.
The whole time.
And but 30% of those 6,000 people have stayed in the town of beginnings. So it's very weird that the town is kind of like a ghost town
at this point. When there should be 2,000 people in it.
And that's when we hear a cry for help, and we see the Einkrad Liberation Army picking on
kids
and a daycare instructor.
Yeah.
Which it's very interesting that they have a daycare system.
It's very interesting that there's more kids that logged into this freaking game.
Well, kids who may or may not be orphans now because 4,000 people are dead now. And we have the Einkrad Liberation Army clearly who did not get the memo when Kirito and Asuna run. They didn't get the memo that the Einkrad Liberation Army was saved by these people on the 74th floor. Mm-hmm. But they're shaking children down like they're mobsters. And it's like, of all the people to pick on, why are you picking on children? That makes no sense.
You owe us a lot of back taxes. Give us your equipment.
I was like, all right,
little, they're 12.
Not Little John, which was the guy, the sheriff from the Robin Hood.
Sheriff of Nottingham.
Yeah. All right, Nottingham Sheriff. Saying it wrong.
But anyway.
It was mustache twirling ridiculous.
Anyway, so Asuna and Kirito jump onto the scene, and Asuna... scares the crap out of them. And she's like, don't worry. This is a safe zone. You're not going to die.
And I'm so happy it was her for once. Like, I'm really glad because I'm sick of it. It's always Kirito, Kirito. I can't say that 10 times fast. But, you know, I'm so happy that she's the one who jumped in and really got it done. And then
Kirito didn't do anything. And, and I'm really glad that they let her have this one. Mommy's great.
Mommy's a badass.
And so Asuna scares them and they turn tail and run.
And by scares, we mean beat the daylights out of without actually
this is another one of my favorite scenes so far in the anime. It was just fantastic to see her scare the crap out of these jerks.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty awesome. But when the danger is gone, all of a sudden Yui starts acting really weird and she looks up towards the sky and she says,
their hearts.
You know, and she just starts saying these really weird things and then she screams and her eyes go weird and there's this
weird sound effect. The darkness. Mm-hmm. I've never been here before.
Yeah.
I've always been in the dark. Help me. I don't know. Yeah. I've always been alone. And then she just kind of passes out.
And she passes out again.
She screams so hard the world goes monosaturated.
And then everybody was like, WTF.
Messes with the colors of the game itself.
Yeah, and the episode ends with Kirito and Asuna sort of just being left there going, what just happened? What do we do? And that's where we leave for this week. So... Like I said, it's a good thing that we have these two on the case because they have shown that they can solve some mysteries.
Look at here, see? We're
going to get to the bottom of this, see?
We're going to bring it to you in the news tomorrow.
Jinkies.
Stop the presses. All right.
As far as I'm concerned, and we're doing dot hack parallels again, Yui is probably like Aura. Something in the game that's an anomaly. Maybe she's the AI running the game that gains sentience. Maybe this is... There's an issue in the game somewhere. She's probably not supposed to exist. Or if she is, she's probably not supposed to exist where she is right now. Mm. She got away from wherever she's supposed to be, keeping the game in line.
It makes me wonder if Kayaba Akihiko wasn't running some weird experiments. I mean, he created this own world. Maybe he was trying to create life, too. I don't know.
Could have been.
That's not one of the things I was spoiled for. I have no idea what Yui is. So.
Okay.
I had originally assumed that she was a trap.
Like, that's possible, too.
A trap.
Well, yeah, like, to get in their good graces, and then the moment that...
Like a Trojan horse virus.
Yeah, there could be, like, a kid version of Laughing Coffin.
I actually
like Children of the Corn.
Yeah.
I actually thought, when I first started watching it, the same thing. I just thought, basically, that, like, she was a trap built by him, but then she forgot what she was, and by the time she's supposed to spring into action, she basically is on their side. But anyway, we'll find out next week.
Yeah, we will, for sure. She's be covering another two episodes next week. In the meantime, I guess you can follow us all on Twitter. Katie, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Kiaxet. That's K-I-A-X-E-T. I'm also on the Attack on Titan panel and the upcoming Ruby panel.
Liz.
Hey, everyone. You can find me at Lizzie Maui on Twitter and Instagram at LizzyMawy. You can also find me later on tonight on the Musketeers panel, and you can also find me... Where am I? Dominion on Thursday nights with Tari, and that's why he's here. He reminds me.
Yes. Where are you?
What's my job is. And you can find me on Twitter at Tari J. That's TauriJay. You can catch me on The Extant on Wednesday and Dominion as well. Ha-ha.
Ah.
And I'm Megan. You can follow me on Twitter at TheManguin. That's TheManguin. I'm also on the Attack on Titan panels here on Sunday nights. Thank you guys so, so much for tuning in this week and sticking with us for this whole hour. We will see you guys next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.